There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Thursday, the 3rd of October. We spoke to Salam Al-Mari of the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center as they prepare for the return of the UAE astronaut Hazar Al-Mansouri from the International Space Station.
What kind of reception is going to meet Major Al-Mansouri in Kazakhstan when he arrives back this afternoon?
Hopefully a very happy one, of course. We'll have teams from Roscosmos and also teams from NASA and a team from the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center coming on about 12 helicopters, some planes, and also some ground vehicles to meet them at the landing site. Obviously, that team is going to be comprised mainly of medical personnel. They'll be checked once they land, and they'll go through different procedures and obviously take off their spacesuits. And once they're ready, then we'll fly from the landing site back to Karaganda for a couple of hours, and then we'll fly back to Moscow, of course, and the Americans will fly back to Houston.
And what do we know about the actual journey that he's taking on the way back in terms of how long it takes, who will be with him?
Yes, so he's coming back on the Soyuz MS-12 spacecraft, which launched into space about 200 days ago. That had Nick Higg from NASA and Alexei Ovchinin from Roscosmos. And he will be coming back with them on this flight. So he's coming back with a different crew on the Soyuz MS-12. The flight itself should be undocking around from the ISS around 12 p.m. Dubai time to land about 3 hours later. Actually, 11:30 a.m. Dubai time to land about 3.5 hours later in Karaganda, close to Karaganda in Kazakhstan.
And what are you looking forward to learning once the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center and the other space officials here in the UAE get a chance to speak to Major Al-Mansouri?
Well, I mean, we've been obviously in contact with him on a daily basis, but the objectives are, of course, here that, you know, this is the first person from the UAE who's visited the International Space Station, who's gone to space, the amount of experience that he has, that he's learned during his 8-day mission, and also the results that will be coming in over the next couple of months of the 16 different scientific experiments that he's conducted is a little glimpse of what we'll be learning. And if we're looking, obviously, towards future space flights and, having an active human space flight program and a next mission, then his experience, what he's learned, all of the activities that he's conducted and how we can better, conduct our space missions in the future will be key learning from this mission for us.
Which is the big thing, isn't it? I mean, it's been tremendously exciting watching Major Al-Mansouri go to the International Space Station to see all the interactivity from him while he's there. But the bigger picture, what doors does his trip, his mission, open for the UAE space program?
I think definitely that opens a lot of doors. I mean, globally, the news of Al-Mansouri being in space has been huge. The impact has been big locally in the Arab world and on a global stage. And this is really signifying that the UAE is here to play a role in human spaceflight. Our next mission that we plan would be significantly upgraded from a scientific perspective. We plan to include all of the different universities in the UAE and the region in active science that is linked to our major objectives. So I think, you're telling all of the space agencies that you're here to stay, and you're a partner in exploration of space, which I think is a great thing for the UAE to be doing.
What will it mean for investment, the excitement and the visuals, as well as the experience and what you've learned from it? What will it mean from investment at a government level, at a private level, and even in an educational level? I know the universities here, a lot of them have opened up sort of their own space programs on the back of this.
Yeah, Devin, that's a great question. I mean, obviously there is government funding coming through to get our astronauts into space. And then, you know, if an amount of that funding can seep through to the universities, to the education sector, to the industry in the UAE, to where we are developing you know, our own different types of devices. We're developing equipment for research. We're funding research in the universities locally, where they will then be conducting that research in the ISS. I think that, you know, really gives you a very active ecosystem of universities, education, industry, and government working together for the betterment, first of all, of mankind, but also for space exploration.
So what's next? What happens after this? Major Al-Mansouri lands, you will greet him. In 2 months, 3 months, 4 months time, what's next for your space program?
I think firstly, obviously, we all have to take a couple of weeks off holiday, that's for sure. But, you know, after that, definitely, you know, we are still thinking about currently, you know, what our next mission is, what that's going to be. We have a lot of plans in place. We are, you know, discussing those plans currently. I can't really talk about them because they're not official yet. But the objective is, of course, that we need to move on from where we are currently. We need to look at more advanced training programs, a deeper scientific mission, and also missions to space that can help us conduct those deeper scientific missions.
And Salim, you're going to be one of the first people to meet Hazza, to meet Major Al-Mansouri when he lands. What do you personally want to ask him?
Well, I'm going to say to him, first of all, a great job well done. First of all, I'll be very happy that he's safe on the ground. And I spoke to him last night, and I know that, you know, he's had a very, very busy 8 days. I think he hasn't had enough. I definitely think he wants to stay there longer. So I'll be very happy when he's on the ground safe and that we can basically move on to the next steps with him.
Well, thanks very much for speaking to us. Salim Al-Mansouri, Assistant Director General for Scientific and Technical Affairs at the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Centre, speaking to us this morning from Kazakhstan, where this afternoon he is going to welcome back Major Al-Mansouri Hazza, the UAE's first astronaut. We appreciate your time.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that. It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that. It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that.
You might not have ordered it, but what are you willing to pay for it? This is our discussion because Ian Ohan, a man who is never short of an opinion or a pizza, has come out and said that he thinks that delivery is eventually going to cost us 20 dirhams each time we order something. Now, background, he's the founder and CEO of Crush Brands. They are the Freedom Pizza people. He has gone on the record several times being critical of the big delivery companies. Obviously, Freedom Pizza delivers pizzas as well, but you could argue that it's part of its operating costs because the bigger business is not being a delivery company, the bigger business is being a pizza company. But for the numerous delivery companies that we see delivering everything through the amalgamating apps, delivery is their business. And a lot of them are subsidising the delivery very, very heavily. Ian thinks that it cannot continue. This is him talking about the fact that he does charge 7 dirhams when it costs him 20 dirhams to deliver. That's what he reckons the sweet spot is, that it is 20 dirhams is the true cost of delivery, and we're all getting it for cheaper than it's worth. So Richard did ask him this morning, hey, are you subsidizing as well?
We are subsidizing because we see the delivery as a part of our cost infrastructure. And we also, you know, for us, we have a utility value for our drivers that third-party delivery doesn't. So when you see the third-party delivery drivers lying all over the city, to me, that's not good business. You know, they're just sitting around waiting for a delivery. Our drivers work as team members. They become managers in our stores. And so they do everything within our system. So we have a utility value beyond just the delivery itself.
So that's Ian's point. And he reckons that eventually the big companies and the smaller would-be big companies, if that makes any sense, in the delivery space, are going to have to stop subsidising and they're going to have to charge you what it is worth. Will you pay it, is the question.
It'd be a brave company, wouldn't it, such as Ian's, to say, well, I think it's worth 20, 25 dirhams, and start charging it and see at what point the business starts to fall away. It'd be an interesting experience for everybody else. Trying to get everybody else to do it at the same time, I think it's probably sort of fairly remote possibility because there will be people who think, no, I'm going to build it in. I'm not looking for such a great profit margin. I will build it in and I will win business that way by having a cheaper delivery.
When he was explaining to us that in the United States, where he was recently, it's already happening. The cost of delivery charges are rising.
Well, a recent investor last week was being interviewed in the U.S. and referred to the whole industry as profitless prosperity. So it's a service that customers want, but it's heavily subsidized and has no road to profitability. What's happening in the U.S. these days, and it's already heading here. Uber have just introduced dynamic pricing here, but they've introduced fees. The business model is simple. There's a two-party system. So they have to take money from the merchants, called the take rate, which was traditionally around 30% of the order, which is a pretty hefty fee. And then they would take a delivery fee from the consumer. So what's happening is at the beginning, they were able to command those 30% rates because operators just felt they needed to do it. But today there's 10, Uber Eats, Deliveroos in every market.
Other delivery services are available.
They're all there and they're all competing for the same customer and the same merchant.
Well, a number of listeners have been in touch with us, used pointing out that when we consider food delivery, customers aren't actually the only ones paying for it.
Personally, I wouldn't pay more than maybe about 10 or maximum 15 dirhams for food delivery. But I think it's important to note that it's not only the delivery fee that the consumer pays, but the delivery companies also charge a percentage on the order to the restaurant. So it's the combined fee that they are charging.
Yeah, and the typical fee is, Rich, you know these figures?
Well, Ian was saying the typical traditional, he calls it the take rate, was about 30%. So if you put a 100 dirham order in at your favourite burger joint, the burger joint will get 70 dirhams and the Uber Eats, Deliveroo, Zomato type organisation will take 30%. But Ian said competition in the industry means that that is now coming down to 20 or even 15% in mature markets.
To me, it all depends on what you order. If you order some one item, as I do quite a lot, that might be 40 dirhams, I would tip, for instance, 5 dirhams on that, and I'm happy with a 7 dirham delivery charge. If it was 100 dirhams or 150 dirhams, I would tip double, and I would be happy with a higher delivery charge. But if you've got a low cost item, and you want, suppose I'm doing 40 dirhams for a pizza, and the delivery charge is 20, that's 50%. That to me would be too high. I think people would balk at that.
Well, Saleh's been in touch. He reckons that food delivery places might need to rethink where they're delivering.
I recall in the early 80s and 90s, Domino's Pizza, a pioneer in food delivery, was able to provide the service by keeping the cost low and the coverage area to a bare minimum of 2 to 3 kilometers radius. So why can't businesses in UAE do the same?
Do you know what? We're getting a lot of love for the drivers, actually. A lot of people sort of saying, look, you have to consider the pressure that they're under as well in order to make the deliveries, to make their margins. Here's one. The vast majority of delivery motorcycle drivers are dangerous. Someone's saying, look, I refuse to order anything using a motorcycle, but I support Ian and Freedom Pizza because their drivers are one of the few consistently driving properly. Basically, they're saying to proper road regulations. Other people sort of saying that they worry about some of the drivers they see on the streets in terms of training and in terms of the hours and things they're working.
Yeah, I think that isn't a training thing, A, and B, it's how much pressure is on them to do so many deliveries in an hour or in a shift. And I think the pressure on them is one thing. Do you guys tip via the app or do you tip cash?
I tip cash.
I tip via the app.
And I tip via cash as well, only because I've got that old restaurant thing, is do they really get it if you tip? I'm a bit old school on that, but I tend to give cash. Yeah.
It's weird. I tip via the app when it's the car services, when it's the ride hailing services, because you get a chance to rate the driver and then give a tip. But I don't know, when someone comes to my door, I'm just kind of used to think to giving a tip. Someone pointing out that drones will still deliver. Someone else pointing out that we could all keep our costs exceptionally low by using our legs and just walking to pick up whatever we were eating, which is
a novel concept.
Ian said that's where he thinks it will go. He thinks we will order less because the massive losses that the Ubers and the Deliveroos are ramping up at the moment are not sustainable. They will have to raise their prices. It will, he says, in the United States now, it's about 20 or 30 dirhams is your typical delivery charge. That will come here. And once that happens, people will, he says, order less food to be delivered. We will walk more. We will cook more.
We've heard this story so many times this week already that if you're not profitable, your company isn't going to grow and people aren't going to look at investing into it. And this is part of the same thing. You've got to up your charges until you become profitable one way or another, or you go out of business. That's the other option, of course. So if you can do it, profitability. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Why not?
Yeah, and we've heard from one of those restaurants. This franchise owner says that it isn't sustainable, in his opinion, for foods to be on the delivery platforms.
I'm not in favor of the fruit, the prices going up. What I'm in favor of is the amount of deduction that the delivery companies, which are now currently, most of them are under one umbrella, charge the owner, as well as in some cases they charge additional fee to the customer. Currently, they charge me 25% just to be on the platform while I have to deliver the goods myself. Therefore, the cost for me actually adds up to approximately 50% of the price of the food. Yet, they do not do anything apart from the platform, the application. And the reason why I continue to work with them and to deal with them is the fact that there is the exposure that I get. Other than that, I am subsidizing the delivery to the customer, as well as subsidizing the companies themselves. I'm paying 25% for goods that they don't deliver, just to use their platform, which in my opinion should be 5%, not more than that.
And obviously there are a number of platforms out there with slightly different delivery models. Some deliver, some don't. What they charge the restaurants will differ. But interesting to hear from a franchise restaurant owner there.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
We're talking food delivery because the boss of one of Dubai's biggest pizza delivery companies says we are paying too little for our food delivery. The true cost of food delivery is 20 dirhams and the subsidies that are ongoing at the moment cannot last. He is Ian Ohan, the founder and CEO of Crush Brands, the parent of Freedom Pizza, and he's in the studio. So 20 dirhams, explain the maths.
So for us, if we take the total number of deliveries that we do and we divide the total cost of our delivery infrastructure, the raw cost of a single delivery is 20 dirhams. And more importantly, you know, and we view delivery as a cost center, so it's a loss leader for our business. And that's what I believe third-party delivery is. The third-party delivery companies that are in the market today have been operating with heavily subsidized models. They lose money on every single order that they out. What's going to happen now, it's already happened in the U.S. and it's sweeping across the world, is they now need the consumer to pick up the tab.
So it seems to me that the sweet spot for delivery, the actual delivery charge at the moment, is about 7 dirhams. That's what a lot of the Uber Eats and Deliveroos are charging. They're bringing in variability, but let's use 7 as a ballpark. I tried to order a pizza from you this morning, and the delivery charge was 6.67 dirhams.
Plus
VAT, so 7 dirhams for you. So why are you charging 7 dirhams when it costs you 20 dirhams? Are you subsidizing as well?
No. Well, we are subsidizing because we see the delivery as a part of our cost infrastructure. And we also, for us, we have a utility value for our drivers that third-party delivery doesn't. So when you see the third-party delivery drivers lying all over the city, to me, that's not good business. You know, they're just sitting around waiting for a delivery. Our drivers work as team members. They become managers in our stores. And so they do everything within our system. So we have a utility value beyond just the delivery itself.
So what do you think is going to happen if the true cost is 20 dirhams and the delivery companies are subsidizing at the moment? Brandy, you've got the numbers. Just remind us, Deliveroo's financials came out overnight and they were pretty grim, weren't they?
What is it? We've got a loss for the last year of £232 million.
And Uber in the most recent quarter lost about $5 billion. Yeah. I mean, most of that's ride hailing, not delivery, but they do have Uber Eats. We heard Faris Gandour earlier on from Wamda Capital saying these kind of sort of in perpetuity loss making organizations, by definition, it's not sustainable. So what is happening elsewhere in the world that we can expect to happen here down the line?
Well, a recent investor last week was being interviewed in the U.S. and referred to the whole industry as profitless prosperity. So it's a service that customers want, but it's heavily subsidized and has no road to profitability. What's happening in the U.S. these days, and it's already heading here. Uber have just introduced dynamic pricing here, but they've introduced fees. The business model is simple. There's a two-party system. So they have to take money from the merchants, called the take rate, which was traditionally around 30% of the order, which is a pretty hefty fee. And then they would take a delivery fee from the consumer. So what's happening is at the beginning, they were able to command those 30% rates because operators just felt they needed to do it. But today there's 10, you know, Uber Eats, Deliveroos in every market.
Other delivery services are available.
They're all there and they're all competing for the same customer and the same merchant. So today, you know, a simple example, McDonald's used to have an exclusive deal with Uber Eats in the U.S. They were paying a 20% take rate. Now they're, you know, they've opened up to another other parties and now they're down to 15%. So the take rates are going down on an already profitless business. And so the now the average rate now in the U.S. is about 20 dirhams. I mean, the lowest you'll pay in the U.S. is 20 dirhams. And what they do is they'll charge a 15% delivery fee, or what they call a service charge, 15% of the order value. Then they'll charge a delivery fee, which is a some weird black box calculation about where the drivers are and distance from the store. And then if your order is less than $10, they'll charge you another $2 on top of that. So I was in the U.S. recently, and I ordered through Uber Eats just to check it out, and $111 order, I paid a $19 delivery fee, which is, I mean, that's a 70 dirham delivery fee, which really makes you think twice about using that type of service.
We've got a Twitter poll running this morning, Ian, and we're asking people, what is your breaking point for what you pay for food delivery? We're giving people an option of 10 dirhams, 20 dirhams, or 50 dirhams. And the vast majority of people, 67%, or the majority of people, say 10 dirhams is the limit. So if people aren't going to pay more than 10 dirhams, but the true cost is 20 dirhams, what's going to happen? Are we going to stop having as much food delivered to us? What's the end game?
I think it's partially that, because there is a resistance. But what's interesting, a recent study in the U.S. for the USDA found that the average U.S. consumer ordering online is prepared to pay $8.50. You know, they're expecting to pay between delivery and all the service charges. So that's 31 dirhams. So if now 2 years ago in the U.S., you know, the same order that I paid $19 for, I would have paid $3 or $4 for. You know, and so I think there's going to be an evolution of consumers, you know, capacity to pay more. But I also think there will be a limit to that. And it'll also open up, it'll level the field for restaurants as well, because if their delivery charges are more, they can sustain more, then it also allows them to manage their own third-party delivery.
Will it change the way we're ordering? Will it go from a 3 or 4 times a week thing to a treat thing?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's going to reduce the frequency of order. You know, like you'd order, you know, at 20 dirhams, you're going to order a lot less. I mean, I think the average person, because you'll think twice about it. You know, I'm not a very price-sensitive person when it comes to food delivery, but, you know, $19, I would never do that again. And it felt almost insulting.
Ian Ohan is the founder and CEO of Crush Brands, the parent of Freedom Pizza. As always, appreciate your time, Ian. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
All eyes upwards as we wait for the conclusion to this particular story.
Auto sequence start, second umbilical separating, T-minus 15 seconds. You can see the engine starting to fire.
Second umbilical.
The first stage ramping up.
Engine turbo pumps at twice speed. Engines at maximum thrust.
And liftoff.
Liftoff.
Oleg Skripochka, Jessica Mir, Hazar Ali, Al-Mansouri leaping forth from Gagarin start on their way to the International Space Station.
Hard to believe that was last Wednesday. Natasha Thomas.
Time really flies, doesn't it? It was such an exciting day for us in the newsroom and within programming. But yes, it's the end of Emirati astronaut Hazar Al-Mansouri's trip to the International Space Station.
Do you think he's asked for a late checkout? Could I not just stay for another 4 hours, please?
I'm sure he has.
Frequent spaceman miles.
Well, he's due to touch down in Kazakhstan around 3 o'clock UAE time today. He'll be joined by American astronaut Nick Hague and Russian commander Alexei Ovchinin. On the journey home, they'll be traveling in a Soyuz MS-12 spacecraft, and it'll take them nearly 3.5 hours to land after leaving the ISS. And before starting his trip, Hazar shared a selfie from the space station and also a night view of the UAE.
I'm having a look for the Soyuz MS-12 to see what it actually looks like, to see what, because it's smaller. What they're coming home in is an awful lot smaller. I mean, I know, Rich, you've been looking at this. You and Natasha are effectively our return space flight correspondents this morning.
I've been watching some videos on YouTube, and the Soyuz, which is the one they're in, basically falls to Earth with a bang. Mm. Natasha, does it not?
Yes, it does. So there's a difference between landing in a space shuttle versus a Soyuz capsule or spacecraft. One of the most notable differences, according to astronauts, happens during re-entry. So re-entry for a space shuttle is fairly smooth. You have the wings, which allow for a landing similar to that of a glider. Re-entry for a Soyuz capsule, on the other hand, is often described as a series of car crashes. So this capsule, it's composed of three elements attached end to end, the orbital module, the descent module, and the instrumentation or propulsion module. So the crew occupies the central element, which is the descent module. The other two modules are jettisoned before re-entry, so they burn up in the atmosphere, and only the descent module returns to Earth. Now, there is a guidance and control system within that module, so the crew is able to maneuver the vehicle towards where they're supposed to land, Kazakhstan in this case. So the commander basically is in charge. They fire these 8 hydrogen peroxide thrusters on the vehicle's exterior.
What, say that again?
Hydrogen peroxide thrusters on the vehicle's exterior.
Isn't hydrogen peroxide what you put on spots?
Yes.
Not there, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. Rich, what were you doing in the 80s?
It serves a very different purpose here, Brandy. So this system is deactivated 15 minutes before landing when the parachutes are deployed. And there's some really interesting statistics here. So basically, before entering Earth, the Soyuz actually sheds 2/3 of its mass and this point is about 400,000 feet above the Earth. And then after that, friction, because of the thickening atmosphere, heats up its outer surfaces. And after that, they have only 23 minutes left before landing. And attention then turns to basically slowing down the rate of descent because 8 minutes later, the spacecraft is streaking through the sky at a rate of 755 feet per second.
Sounds fast.
And before it touches down, its speed will slow to only 5 feet per second. So they have very little time to basically achieve that slowing down or, you know, bringing it to that speed. And when it lands, actually, it is at an even lower speed than that.
When this whole journey began, back when they were choosing the astronauts and applicants were putting themselves forward, do you remember, guys, we looked up on the NASA website what you actually needed to become an astronaut. And apart from, you know, being a fighter pilot, you needed Russian was one of the things that NASA said. If you wanted to apply for NASA, the American Space Agency, you'd need the languages because when you're in the ISS, most of the people, a lot of the people you're going to be talking to, if they're not American, they're probably going to be Russian. They also said you needed to be able to swim. And do you remember us all being like, swim? Why would you need to swim? And it's for the re-entry in case you go a bit off course and end up in a lake.
Because it's random, isn't it?
It can be random whether you land on yeah. I mean, I profess to have no insider knowledge of this whatsoever. Yeah. But NASA did say you need to be able to swim in case you need to get out one of these capsules and swim off.
Yes, and that was part of Hazal Mansouri's training. So he learned Russian. I think he already knew how to swim. But the other thing he learned is how to survive in the wilderness in sub-zero temperatures because you never know what could happen. And if he were to land
in a forest or something,
wilderness somewhere where it's freezing cold, then he needs to learn to survive there.
Presumably, you'd also need to learn how to swim in a giant padded spacesuit.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't be much fun, would it? You're all soggy and...
I'm sure they've learned how to get out of it.
Natasha Thomas, what have they been putting on their food up in the space station?
Well, they've been eating all sorts, but I know
what have they been putting on it?
What have they been putting on it?
Is this a joke?
It is. Soyuz sauce. It's the best I can do.
He's off on holiday in 20 minutes' time.
Soyuz sauce. I don't know. Make it up for yourself. I don't know.
The dad jokes are coming thick and plenty.
It's embarrassing, isn't it?
I'm going to use that one with my kids when I get home. They're going to find that funny.
But do you know how to watch it here in the UAE? I think most people have figured it out. But if you don't know, you can watch the live streaming of the landing on the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center or on the NASA website. And this will also, of course, be live on Dubai TV. And of course, we'll be following the coverage very closely in the new center. Mohammed Suleiman is heading down to the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center here in Dubai. And of course, within programming, we'll be watching it very, very closely.
And I presume the NASA feed will be streamed on YouTube as it was when they went up.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I know, Rich, speaking of technology and all things that are whiz-bang and futuristic, you've been speaking to Nick Rago, the tech guy,
about something else that's quite high tech.
Yeah, Microsoft launched a new phone last night. Whoa, hang on. I thought Microsoft and telephones
don't do phones.
Of oil and water. But no, they're back in the phone business. The Surface range of laptops and desktops and tablets that they've got, they've now produced one with two screens that has the Android operating system. Microsoft says it's not a phone. Everyone else in tech says it's a foldable phone. I wanted to find out more about this. For Nick Rago is the group editor of Tech Radar Middle East, regular on Off Script, if you listen to that show. I said, is this the future of smartphones?
I think if you've got a phone that looks like a phone but then folds out into a 7 or 8 inch tablet, that's something that's pretty cool. Now, you've got Huawei doing it with the Mate X, you've got the Samsung. You now have Microsoft coming into the mix with their recently announced foldable phone. And it's a very interesting move for the company because they used to be in the mobile space with the Windows phone devices, and that sort of met an untimely end. And eventually Microsoft stepped away from the smartphone market and said, look, this isn't our strength. We need to be working with hardware and software like we have for many years. Maybe we don't do anything with smartphones just yet. So it's very surprising that they've come back and announced this device and said, okay, look, we want to try again with the smartphone market and see if there's anything here that we can actually do.
It's called the Surface Duo. It's not out for a year or so. They're going to get it in the shops in time for next year's holiday season, which is the build-up to September. It's not a foldable screen. It's two screens with a hinge that kind of looks like one screen when you unfold it.
It looks like a digital book. It's about paperback size.
It kind of is.
It's like the old Nokia Navigator.
It kind of is, because it's got hinges and a couple of screens. It's an updated version of that, if you like. But what about foldable screens themselves? We know that a number of tech companies are working on that. It's not easy technology. Here's Nick Rago again.
I think a lot of us, when phones started sort of growing from the 4.35-inch spectrum to something larger than that, that's, I think, when we sort of panicked and said, okay, do we need phones that are that big? Do we need that extra 1 or 2 inches in our screen displays? Do we need, selfie cameras that flip around or hide away? So I think, whether or not people need foldable phones is very much a bit early to say. I think some people will definitely use it in very innovative ways, both developers and consumers will find new ways to use these kinds of phones. But the one thing that definitely will deter people from being an early adopter is the price tag, because these phones can go anywhere between $2,000 to close to $3,000, $4,000.
Nick Rago of Tech Radar Middle East.
Thank you for listening. We are back Sunday, 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.